hanging around your home, there's a smell of your home that is not ostentatious. Your home is comfortable, but it's not gross. You know what I mean? It's not like over the top. How do you navigate the world of high income, but not live in a luxuriant kind of a way? Run your home and your dough like a biblical boss.
I thought you and I would just start out and maybe give the listener some idea of who is about to drop all these wisdom bombs on them and why I would have wanted you to come on the podcast. So, Jordan Siervo, you are in San Diego. You're not a San Diegan. We'll probably get to that at some point. But the first time I remember meeting in person was around my fire pit. And I think you had sold so many chicken sandwiches that Chick-fil-A said, we're going to reward you with a Whopper pickup truck that does like big jumps in the desert. And you were coming out to Utah to learn how to jump your Ford Raptor over stuff, right? Is that relatively?
That makes me kind of sound like that was true. I remember we kind of barely knew of each other. And I told you that I want a Raptor from Chick-fil-A, and they have a course out here in Utah that they were like, you get to ride it for free if you just get out there. So you let me come over, and I brought a friend of mine, and we just kind of sat around the fire pit and chatted. But those were good times. Chick-fil-A, I've won a handful of vehicles on Chick-fil-A's dime, and it's been a nice perk for sure.
I knew that the Chick-fil-A thing was interesting to people, but what really made me go, wow, this is an episode to do, is the last time Steven and I were in San Diego and we stayed with you, we walked in on your Christmas party for your teams, kind of your leadership. And it was cool to go into your house and see how you run your family. But also, you know, even the Christmas gifts you chose for your team, it was convicting to me. I was like, man, I need to level up my generosity game, not just in like giving money outside the household, but like you were dropping some serious Christmas gifts on your team leads. So I just thought it was cool to see what you're doing. And I'll have some questions for you as we go about just how some of that stuff has translated. But a couple things before we pull Steven in and start talking about kind of fatherhood and business and things like that. But I think you'll be very proud of me. When I stayed at your house, we woke up early and we're kind of like reading the Bible in the morning and stuff. And I remember you were getting ready to go to work pretty early. And you said, can I make you a cup of coffee? And I was like, sure, but like anything is fine. I'm not like a 7-Eleven coffee is fine.
Yeah, I still remember.
And you said, no, sir. And
not in my house.
You got out of scale. You freshly ground me some beans. Well, Jordan, in the last 6 weeks, I have gone to buying my beans from this dude in Missouri who's like a pastor who does roasting of coffee, and he makes really good coffee. I have transitioned from the ultra dark burnt coffee to a light roast for flavor's sake. I've stopped putting anything in my coffee, and I've got I'm measuring my water, I'm doing my pours accurately, everything.
Mark, if I could express how proud I am of you right now.
But when I think about it, you and Adam, we had some downtime and you're like, you want to come to the sneaker store? And I was like, you mean like Dick's Sporting Goods? What's a sneaker store? And then you took me to this place where they had shrink wrapped all these famous sneakers. And you guys, I was looking at the prices and thinking, you guys are going to buy this and you have any money left over to...
That's true. Your influence on me is like how to save and make more money. And somehow my influence on you is how to like spend more on coffee and sneakers. I don't know if it's a good trade-off, but hopefully you've gotten some joy out of it.
Yeah, but that's a good intro for the listener to know that Jordan is very cool, and the things that you do, they make me kind of go, I need to level up my game in all sorts of areas, shoes and coffee being two of those. But I'm sure
I'll take it. I don't know if that's true, but I'll take it.
Cool. Well, let's grab the big man and we'll dive into slinging chicken and raising a multi-generational family team on mission.
Okay.
Yeah.
What can you order off menu that's a great thing to order?
You know, that's a good question. There used to be more. Unfortunately, as we've gotten busier, it kind of slows down our entire production line when we get too specific on off menu. But yeah. I will tell you some of the things that like my kids order pretty much every time. My son will get a Chick-fil-A sandwich with like 8 pieces of bacon on it. So you can pretty much add bacon anything you want.
Oh.
Not a lot of people know that. Throw Did bacon on that. Your chicken minis if you want. On your mac and cheese is really good.
Wow.
They also will get a root beer float, which is not really on the menu, but you can do uh-huh. that. My personal favorite is, I think we have the best milkshakes in the game, but the chocolate and Oreo together, it's unbeatable. So you got to go with the chocolate Oreo milkshake. That's the way to go. It's not really on the menu, but you can make it.
Okay, this is all very helpful information. Last question. I know Mark wants to start in earnest, but while these are all piling up on my mind, tell me about the cherry berry drink and how are they selling?
They're doing amazing. Yeah, really, really good. Also, another one of my kids' favorite. Yeah, all of those kind of limited time frosted lemonades and those have been really popular and they do a really good job. Yeah, they're really good.
Is there a way to get that cherry thing into an ice dreamy kind of a shake? Yeah.
So we do it at a cherry berry frosted lemonade, which would be like a lemon version of that. But you could add it. You can get creative and add it to a milkshake if you want. We do it in an Arnold Palmer and just regular lemonade. You kind of, you know, if you want to throw it in your cold brew, I mean, you know, go for it. I mean, we can make it out.
Okay. Yeah. I love it. Thank you.
Well, in case anybody that has joined our podcast is still interested in hearing things, now that we've given away all of the hot tips on insider Chick-fil-A info, I really want to back up before we even talk about Chick-fil-A, Jordan, and just hear a little bit about some of the things that makes the Ciervo family unique. So how do you first tell us who's in it and what got you guys started in the thinking about family as a multi-generational team mindset?
Okay. So it's my wife and I, April. We've been married for 17 years, just past our 17 year mark. We've got 4 kids. My oldest is 12. Bravery. And then we've got Sayla is my oldest daughter. She's 10. My daughter, Karis, she's 9. And then my youngest son, Shepherd. So, I mean, we probably got started on this journey and it's still, I would say for us, feels pretty early on in the process, but, about like 4.5, 5 years ago, kind of just pre-COVID, it was actually a good time to really dive into some new experiments in our house. But, we went to a family teams conference up in Cincinnati, kind of didn't know what we were getting ourselves into, but got introduced to Jeremy Breyer and some of those guys that, have sort of pioneered this stuff. And, I think initially it was like, that sounds awesome. This is like, this makes total sense, but didn't really know where to start. It probably took us like 6 months to really sort of get the ball rolling on it. But,
where'd you find those guys?
Where do we find those guys? I actually started way back when following Jeff Bethke in like a marriage kind of class that he had. And Jeff started partnering with Jeremy and talking about the family teen stuff. And it was sort of just one thing led to another. We didn't really know what we were signing up for, but it sounded good at the time. And
yeah,
it definitely has changed the trajectory of our family. And I know a lot of you guys have been doing on the journey longer, but seeing it in action from some of those guys and some of you guys has been definitely made it a little bit more attainable for us.
Okay. So what, just so that people kind of know where you're at in all this, because I talk to a lot of people who they read a Jeremy Pryor book and maybe pay for one of the courses. And then they're like, we're doing it all. But Steven and I have been at your house and seen some of this, but I just want the listener to hear, like, what do the big rocks of kind of family rhythm look like for you guys? So things like Sabbath or how you do education, church community, what do those things look like in your home?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, to me, Jeremy Pryor is like the sensei, you know, he's like the master splinter. Well, you know, I'm still, you know, pretty far down on that in that line, but still learning and we're slowly kind of adding more. But for us, Sabbath was our first thing that we implemented, just really just a Shabbat dinner that kind of led into a full Sabbath. And that's been super fruitful for our family. We have kind of, and I don't know how much of this is, how much of this overlaps with family teams or not, but like we've kind of shifted our entire structure of how April and I kind of run our house and, you know, doing more, I would say shifting it more towards a business model than it, what I thought had to be completely separate. So weekly meetings, quarterly offsites, you know, annual summits, you know, family values, that kind of stuff that we had already done previously in our business, but never really connected the dots somehow to implement into family. And that's been super helpful. Education for us has always been homeschool. We're kind of part of a co-op though, that we, our kids go to school 2 days a week. It's a co-op. So Art Christian Academy. So they have like uniforms and kind of a full school day, 2 days a week, and then at home 3 days a week. And yeah, I mean, that's, I would say that's the main kind of tenets of our kind of journey so far. Our kids are still pretty young. So still, you know, we are starting to incorporate them into business somewhat. They love working at Chick-fil-A and, you know, working in the dining room and, you know, serving guests as best they can, but that's somewhat limited with their ages. But yeah, we've been trying to expose them to as much of it as we can through. We've even started kind of proselytizing the family team's mission, you know, in our community out here in California, which is not as well known. We started like a book club with Jeremy's book and even one of Jeff's books. And we've seen some of the families in our community start to implement the stuff the same way we did just a few years ago. So it's been really neat to see how that's kind of snowballing a little bit.
Yeah. It's funny, before dinner the other night, we were reading Genesis, either end of chapter 4, beginning of chapter 5. And it goes through like Seth and Lamech and these people. But there's a little paragraph in there that says, and this family is the one who makes stringed instruments. And this family is the one who dwells in tents. And would you say, because you kind of alluded to it, but is the Siervo family one who sells Chick-fil-A sandwiches, or is it something totally different?
I mean, we definitely do that. I mean, I would say it seems like early on, even before, like, I felt like that was a calling of ours. The idea of hospitality has been a big part of, especially my wife, but even in my kind of journey with the Lord. And so, you know, speaking of Genesis, I mean, I think we felt like kind of that Genesis 12 mandate where, like, you know, Abraham's going to be a blessing in order to bless others, to be a blessing to others. We've kind of felt that early on, that God's kind of called us to, like, he's going to bless us, but it's not really for us. It's not about us. It's to be a blessing. So we've been able to use our home especially, but also our business. I mean, we kind of run it. We've started crossing over, and it's like our home is run like a business. Our business is now run like a family a little bit. And so we really felt like our home specifically is kind of that outpost, if you will. And have just, it seems like there's a constant cycle of ministry / discipleship / hospitality going on through our home. And it's been neat because that's also a good way to integrate our kids to be able to see it. So it's not just this, you know, ethereal thing that happens at work that they don't get to see, you know, they participate in it. So yeah. Chicken is the mechanism, I guess, in a lot of ways for hospitality, but not the only way. I mean, of course, anything we host in our home, there's Chick-fil-A there. So it does cross over pretty well. You know, it makes it easier to feed people. But
when we talk about the unique flavors of a family culture, yours has a very...
it's cooked in peanut oil.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's oftentimes the peanut oil smell that will be brought into the home on accident from, you know, what's on my clothes. But
that's cool.
Can you tell us a little bit more about running your home like a business? What do you mean when you say that?
Primarily around the idea of like administration and structure. We're not actually making money out of our home necessarily yet. I think as our kids get older, that's definitely something that they've already talked about and are interested in. But I just think, I'm just thinking through the idea of like the kind of structure of the meetings and the responsibilities. And I'm trying to teach my kids the idea of work ethic and responsibility. And so, yeah, I think early on in parenthood, I thought like my job as a parent is to serve my children, not realizing that I had the idea as a owner, as a business leader, that if I just do everything for my team members, they don't actually learn anything. They don't take any ownership. They don't actually have buy-in and visit. And it's really the same thing with my kids. So like as they've gotten older, and really when they, I mean, even younger than most people might think, giving them real responsibility because they actually want to contribute. They actually want to feel like they add value, not that they're just, you know, served, you know, by their parents all the time. So I think that just that mindset has been a shift for me. And it's not something that it's like, oh, I have to do this. It's like, oh, I get to do this for the family. And when they recognize that it's, they're a part of the team, I think it adds more value to them and they actually appreciate it more. So
it's an interesting point, Jordan, about running your home as a business, because what, and forgive me if I'm repeating information for people, but men often find out that they take their best energies, their best thinking, their best strategy, and their best skills, and they take it to work. And then when they come home, they want their home to be a place of respite where they basically consume and rest. But we find that when we're going to be Abrahamic families and we want to build something, we want to build a legacy, we want to build an inheritance in five capitals, then we find that, oh, I could bring those same gifts and skills home that I used at work, and I could strategize and I could have quarterly goals, et cetera, et cetera. It changes the way you think about it, which I think is what you're saying. Would you tell us a little bit when you said quarterly, we have quarterly getaways. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. So April and I, and this is probably in the last year and a half or so that we've really been implementing this, but we've kind of realized that like the annual offsite is awesome. And we've been fairly regularly with our weekly meetings, but without kind of following up quarterly to see how, if we're on track or not, it's sort of just things fall through the crack, and you get to the end of the year, you're like, oh yeah, we probably should have revisited that. So so we do, like, a lot of times not even an overnight, but just like, you know, either the kids are in school or, you know, have somebody take care of the kids for the full day, and we'll go off, you know, off site. It just seems to be more efficient if we're
kind
of normal routine, and we review our quarterly rocks to see like how we're doing, if we're on track, what do we need to revisit, kind of revisiting our values and kind of our, where our family is, in our mission for at least for that year. And then see what we need to change. Like, what can we check off and move forward for the next quarter? So just breaking it down in chunks, it just helps us kind of be more efficient with it.
Well, last time, so I knew that this episode would just be interesting because I don't know how many people, just even as a financial planner, and I'm kind of like, just go blue sky, tell me what sounds like it would be awesome to do. And Chick-fil-A comes up in that list. People think of that as a really cool company to work for. And so I knew that would be cool, but both Steve and I were in San Diego last holiday season. And you said, well, come on over. And it's the night I'm throwing my company Christmas party, but you guys should just come over and hang out. And we walked in, and I think I saw some of the things that made me go, okay, this is actually cool. I want to talk more about the integration of work and family and the lessons that go both ways. And so that's where we're going if you're listening to this. But I don't want to skip just the basic question of, lots of people are interested in this business and maybe even are thinking, well, I would like to do that someday. How did you end up doing what you're doing? Give us a quick rundown. And if, you know, as you're going, if you want to sprinkle in a little, you know, here's how you can maybe get them to cook your fries extra crispy or whatever the insider info is, feel free. But mostly I just want to hear, how'd you end up finding yourself in charge of a Chick-fil-A location?
So I grew up in Atlanta, which is kind of Chick-fil-A Mecca, if you will. So when I graduated college, my kind of original plan was try to get a corporate position in Atlanta, entry level. So I took an internship with them that was supposed to be 6 months out in California, just kind of like a marketing internship. The brand was really new in California. I'd never been to California, but I was thinking, hey, I can do it in 6 months, get my foot in the door and head back to Atlanta where I'm from. That was, you know, 18 and a half years ago or so. So I haven't been back. So that plan didn't work out exactly like I thought. But, you know, through that, did the marketing internship, met an operator who was starting his Chick-fil-A out in San Diego. And he was like, listen, Mike, you don't have to do this forever, but come work for me. I'll teach you the ropes. I'll teach you kind of how to get your own. And then move back. I'm like, okay, we'll do that. So year and a half, did that, started interviewing for my own location. And of course the opportunities were in California. So I'm like, well, all right, I'll do it for a few years. You know, I'll, you know, take the opportunities while I'm here. Back then, Chick-fil-A was really young, wasn't making any money, which is how it helped when I was 23 getting my own location, because it was like, oh, you're dumb enough to do this, or you take it, you know. So we weren't making any money. And, you know, nobody could even say Chick-fil-A. So we'd have people walk in the door and they're kind of looking up at the menu. Like our restaurant specifically used to be a Krispy Kreme. So they either come in and try to order donuts, you know, 2 years, 3 years after we're open. And like, no, sorry, that's been a while. Or they would just kind of look up and be like, what is a Chick-a-Flicka? You know, and I'm like, I don't know, but we're Chick-fil-A. I'd love to, you know, let you try some of our products. So it was kind of very much like early in the brand out there on the West Coast. And so, you know, we were kind of on that teetering on that edge of like, is it even going to make it? Or are they going to have to, there were talks about shutting it down just because nobody was making money. So obviously fast forward, we were able to have a lot of momentum, a lot of growth. They built more restaurants out here and it kind of took off from there. And then the opportunities were just available. So, you know, it was just harder to relocate everything back east. We had the opportunity to open a second location and kind of, we just felt like, I think if the Lord kind of showed us the full picture from the beginning, we would have been like, I'm not going to the West Coast. Like, we're used to people, you know? But I think he kind of just gave us enough to kind of walk it out in faith. And he obviously had bigger plans than we did. And it's just, you know, it's been a blessing for our family and you know, just a lot more opportunity impact than we really thought we would have been able to have. So things have definitely changed since then, you know, as far as the process. And California as a brand is definitely, you know, it's not like that anymore. But it was definitely kind of right place, right time for me.
I'd like to ask you a question about being a Chick-fil-A operator. If you want us to cut this question and not put it in the podcast, that's okay. But I would like to ask you a personal question.
Okay.
I don't think it's any secret. The viewer can think, okay, if you operate two Chick-fil-A's, you have high income.
Okay.
So you have high income. Mark and I are in touch with a lot of high and middling income people who live like King Louis XIV, and their lifestyle is extravagant and they want it to be extravagant. They want everybody to think that they are filthy rich, and that's one of the goals of their lives. Mark and I both thought, hanging around your family, hanging around your home, there's a smell of your home that is not ostentatious. It's not self-aggrandizing. Your home is comfortable, but it's not gross. You know what I mean? It's not like over the top. Could you give us some advice, or how do you navigate the world of high income, but not live in a luxuriant kind of a way? I think you do that very well. Do you have any comments on that?
I mean, that's a good question. I mean, I think some of that was sort of ingrained as a kid. You know, my parents did a good job of kind of teaching a little bit of frugality. I think even King Louis might have a hard time living in California. So I think part of it is also like when your state takes over 50% of your income,
right?
Like, you know, like there's not as much left as when it looks like, you know, when it starts to come in. So, but I mean, for us, like we, in that idea of our value of like hospitality and like trying to be a blessing to others, like we try, I mean, obviously we all have our vices. I do like sneakers from time to time, but for the most part, like we try to like structure and try to teach our kids around spending, like, how can we, is this something we need, or is this something that we can also bless others with? So, you know, it helps at least create a filter for as we're making decisions, you know, like, do we need it to upgrade our home? Like, are we able to do the things that the Lord has asked us to do with our home? Like, we have our kids sharing room and we have a lot of extra bedrooms, so you guys can come stay. Like, that's awesome for us. We don't need more than that, you know? And I think also as you get older, I realize anyway that, like, you know, I don't need more to manage just to show that I have, you know,
right.
Like, I don't want that, you know? So yeah, I mean, it's probably a combination of things, but I do think it also helped when we came out to California, we made no money, you know, like Chick-fil-A was losing money. And so, you know, not starting from that position of like, you know, we're crushing it, like, you know, like some, you know, signing bonus with an NFL, you know, rookie or whatever. Like this is like, we've got to create a budget. We've got to operate off of this. kind of limited income because we don't know if we're going to be able to survive out here. And then as it grows over time, you know, you just kind of maintain, you know, you try not to increase your standard of living with your income and your income.
Right.
And it leaves more for other opportunities and investments and stuff like that.
Well, I think your comment that you want to stay sort of outward focused, others centric, giving, hospitable. I think that's a very wise kind of boundary line to set on how much we soak in on ourselves. So,
yeah, I mean, we probably put more money into the outside of our house, you know, our pool and our yard and our now a pickleball court because like, yeah, I know you guys
in your back in where the lawn was in your backyard.
No, we moved it over where the basketball goal is. There's enough perfect space right there. So
wow.
So like, but those are all things like it makes it easier to host. It makes, you know, like right now my daughter's actually having a birthday party at our house. But like we had the whole school came over yesterday, last day of school. Like we'd like to have a full house and the yard, you know,
so right.
We're outside a lot. Like that is like it just. It blesses us to be able to, you know, open our home up.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, because there is a model of abundance that's it's just never spending money. And
right.
That is a ditch to fall into just as much as ostentatiously spending money. I think what Steve and I were impressed with is like you guys had that awesome soapstone cooking thing and this a cool outdoor kitchen space and all that. And I was just thinking, knowing Jordan, I know this cost a ton of money to build this, so it's not like you weren't willing to pony up, but it also matches just that tone of like there was a bunch of 20 somethings hanging around your house, some of whom were your employees and people in your community, and like we had a perfect place to hang out. And
We try to think through it like what is going to create more community and not like how do I, you know, create this solo space for just, you know, I love a nice solo space, but like our house is really built around the opposite. I mean, it's really built around what's going to bring people around the table, around the fire pit, around the, you know, the Blackstone, you know, cooking, you know, opportunities to like serve and feed and, you know, that kind of thing. So,
yeah.
And honestly, there's always somebody either staying, visiting, or living at our house. You know, we try to, you know, the funny thing is like we have so much, you know, I talk about Jeremy being the sensei, like we have a lot, we have so far to go, you know, it's not like I'm trying to show people this is, you know, this is the right way to go, but we do feel like, you know, we're maybe a little further along than we were 5 years ago. So we want to be able to open our home and be like, hey, you know, take what you will, you know, and if we can bless you in that, great, you know. And so we try to provide as many opportunities for that as we can. So it's not just like insular, like our family goes retreat there, you know, more like it's open.
I love that because I think the typical ways that you're just default going to spend money are isolating. Like buying the super fancy luxury car or the trip or whatever. You might do it and enjoy it with your family or your spouse, but a lot of those things actually put distance between you and other people. So
right.
I hadn't thought of that, but that's cool to hear. Chick-fil-A has this reputation of having a really specific culture. You said my pleasure at the beginning. I was kind of going to see how many times I could count that phrase got uttered on this podcast. But how much have you been able to bring some of this stuff that you guys are doing in the family and kind of the unique culture that's the Siervo culture and bring it to work where... Tell me if I'm wrong, but I think you've got a lot of like young adults. It's almost like being a young adult / youth minister in terms of the team you've got. How do you leverage the good things about the Chick-fil-A culture and then bring the things that is you guys as you're thinking about leading a team at work and also obviously leading your family?
I think the benefit of the Chick-fil-A brand is it does generally attract a different type of employee or applicant, you know, and that helps at least kind of with that baseline. You know, for me, I always, restaurant industry in general has kind of a yucky kind of feel or like, you know, bad language and smoking and like this kind of like, not like the typical environment that you would want your kids to be working in. I want my kids to like working there and be part of that, you know? And so we've definitely been intentional about how do we create that culture? I think for us, a lot of it has been starting with like, core values. Like, so when people come in, I do what's called like a vision and value. So I start off within their first month, they're going to come, I'm going to share with them like what we're about, So they kind of know what they're signing up for. And if it's not a good fit, like I'm like, no hard feelings. Like, please don't try to make it fit. If it's not good, it's not good. But, you know, if they slip through the interview process and don't want to kind of align with the values we have, and we're kind of unashamed about what second mile service means and where it comes from in the Bible. And, you know, we're going to pray before our meetings. And like, you don't have to be a Christian, but you do have to understand, like, this is what we're about, you know, as a family. It's a family business, you know? So we, like you saw, we'll have our teams over for the Christmas parties or for summer getaways and stuff. Like, we want them to feel like there's someone integrated in. And for us, like, early on, you know, we have maybe 250 employees now, but when we first started, I had 30 employees and my family was all back east. Like, this was our family in a sense. And we told them that, you know, so I know there's a lot of people have different views on that. Like, oh, well, you can't fire families, so don't call your employees. It's like, yes, there are some differences, obviously, but I discipline my family and I hold them to high expectations and I want to see them succeed. And I want to send them out. Like, if they, there are many, many former employees that have started their own Chick-fil-A's or other businesses. And like, I'm super proud of that. I mean, this isn't like, I'm not signing a contract for life, but I want them to feel welcome at, you know, when they're in this organization. I have something that I do that I think is valuable, but I have office. I have my assistant kind of assigned office hours that any employee can come for a one-on-one meeting for anything. Like, it could be about work or it could be about how to set a budget or, you know, some personal stuff that they're going through. They just need prayer or, you know, that kind of thing, just to kind of leave the door open. And people will take advantage of that. We also offer like a counselor that we pay for. Like, if somebody has something a little heavier that they don't want to share, you kind of mentioned, like, you're like a youth pastor. I definitely have felt like that at times, probably very unqualified, but definitely felt, you know, that I'm pastoring and shepherding some of these, you know, people through life that's just hard. And when you do life with people, like, you're going to, some of that stuff's going to come up, you know? And so when we're asking them to bring their best to work and, you know, show up for the guests, understanding that there's going to be times that's going to be hard to do based on whatever's going on in their personal lives. And so we try to kind of provide opportunities that either myself or one of our leaders or, you know, an actual professional counselor can help kind of work through some of that with them so they could be a better employee and they can, you know, one of our core values is growth. We want them to grow in all areas of their life, you know? So we want to challenge them in that and know that we're going to hold them to high expectations. They know that going in, but, you know, we want to provide them tools and resources to be able to do that. And hopefully when they leave, and we tell everybody this at Vision Values, like, you're likely not going to be a Chick-fil-A forever, and that's fine. We hope you'll be able to look back at your time at Chick-fil-A fondly and think, I really learned a lot. I really grew as a person. I grew in my leadership. I grew not just like I know how to make a milkshake better now, but like actually like, you know, life skills that are going to help them in the future. I just think that's, you can get that if you go in with that perspective beforehand. I think you're going to lead with that, you know, hopefully.
I have one more kind of big existential question, and then okay. I want to get to a couple of fun ones before we wrap up. But, you know, I don't know, probably most people don't realize how Chick-fil-A works. I talk to people all the time. They're like, how much does it cost to open a Chick-fil-A? Hundreds of thousands of dollars? And I believe it used to be $10,000, right? It was the upfront investment. Is that true?
It used to be five when I started.
Okay.
Wow.
But it's actually 10,000 now.
Okay. Yeah. So it's not like a capital intensive thing, but the downside of that, and I hope I'm not sharing anything that's not allowed to be shared, but is that you don't bring with you like if you build a super successful restaurant or two, it's not like that's something you can hand down to the generations like you would if you started a local business of most other sorts.
Right.
So just to kind of think from the perspective of a guy who's gotten really deep on the multi-generational assets kind of mindset, but whose day job, like in some ways it's like being a really high income employee, because you've got this cash cow business that's going, but at some point you're going to probably decide, right, we're done with operating Chick-fil-A's and it's not like we've built a multi-generational asset in Chick-fil-A. So how do you think about using kind of that engine to power multi-generational assets and diversify and all that jazz? Because it's a unique business.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was one of the harder things when I first kind of go to the family team's idea. It's like, that was a challenge for me because I'm thinking like, I'm pouring into this. We've 10x this business as we started. And we'll basically just, when we're done, we just hand it right back up to Chick-fil-A. You know, they give you your $5,000 back, they thanks for your time and like, thanks for growing the business, you know? But, you know, if you think about it from their perspective, when I was 23 and they were handing over this multi-million dollar business to me and, you know, I had a $5,000 investment you know, I burn that thing down. Like they're on the hook for that. I just walk away, you know? So like, yeah, it took a lot of the risk up front. Sure. And now that it's where it's at, like, obviously they benefited, you know, probably, you know, more than I have it in the long run, but the opportunity, I think while I do operate it, I think is, you know, the only thing I really own is the opportunity and the liability. So the liability is all on me, unfortunately, but so is the opportunity. So, I mean, I'm going to continue to grow it, I'm going to get as much income out of it as I can. And I'm able to also offer, you know, employment and leadership development and all these other things through this mechanism that I really wouldn't have that influence otherwise, you know? So from the multi-generational standpoint, like I just realized that this is not going to be my, yeah, like you said, passed down to my kids, multi-generational business, but they still can work with me in the business. They can still learn business through this mechanism. You know, I could potentially help them start their own restaurant if they wanted to. Also using the income to create, you know, assets, primarily like real estate is what I've kind of, you know, try to put money into is short-term and long-term real estate, because of the fact that I can also use that to teach my kids. I could pass that on. And that's an asset that's going to appreciate over time. So it's kind of one of those things, like I could get upset that I don't own it, can't pass it down, and go start something else that will make a third of the amount of money or less, you know, but I own it. Or I could use the income to create other opportunities and invest in other ways. And that's kind of the way we went with it. I think it's easy at this stage, you know, almost 20 years in to get frustrated with the model, but also, you know, Chick-fil-A's been very upfront about it and we're pretty generous about it early on. And now it's up to me.
Yeah, I like that you make the point that the legacy has to do with passing skills, relationships, knowledge onto your kids and involving them in what you're doing. And it's incredible experience for them. And it could be the case, you don't know, it could be the case that four generations from now, you are a restaurateur family. It sure could be the case that we're a chicken raising family. Who knows?
Right.
But the fact that you're in a position to involve them in what you do as an owner operator is really unique. I think it's great.
Yeah, and I remember as a kid, maybe aside from maybe one take your kid to work day, I didn't really get to see my dad work or know what he was.
Exactly right.
So this is an opportunity that I have that I need to take advantage of.
Is there a mandated retirement age?
Not for operators. There are for if you work for corporate staff, but no operators, you know, as long as, you know, if you start running into the ground, I think they'll find a way.
Right.
But as long as you're, you know, again, figuring out a way to delegate responsibilities and it's running effectively and kind of within the Chick-fil-A model and culture, you know, I know operators have done it for a long time. Now you carry that liability with you all the time. So a lot of guys get out because they don't want, you know, that 250 plus team member, you know, liability on their head. But yeah, there's no, like, they don't foreshadow at any point. So.
Yeah. Stephen, before Jordan jumped on, you were speaking of some conspiracy theories or cherry berry.
You're on TikTok too much, Stephen. I don't know what you're talking about.
I just know that people are interested. People are very interested in Chick-fil-A, and people always want a gotcha for Chick-fil-A because Chick-fil-A has such a, like, a halo over the logo in people's minds. No, I don't have anything to say. I do want to ask you one final question, which is your Sabbath dinner. We're kind of doing a series about Sabbaths, and you mentioned that was the first thing that you did. Could you walk us through some, like, the top five elements that happen when you do a Sabbath dinner at your home?
Sure. I would say some of the biggest lessons we've learned. I mean, I personally love smoking meat, and my kids thankfully love meat too. So I typically try out a new smoked meat recipe. Right now I've got a chicken on the smoker right now that I'm going to smoke until Sabbath and Shabbat tonight. But I did learn that early on. I used to try weird, like, funky recipes, and the quickest way to ruin a Shabbat is making a meal that you know your kids will hate, you know? So for a while it was like, we just did this. I literally did breakfast for dinner every Shabbat, like, cause I love pancakes. I'm like, if that can start on a good note, like, I know it's going to go much better, you know?
That's smart.
Now they've gotten a little more adventurous and let me try, you know, different meats cause they love meat. But yeah, if you're like, you know, your wife sends you a recipe on Instagram and she's like, we should try this. I said, just don't try that on Shabbat, you know, try it.
Right.
So definitely a good meal, usually maybe a little more effort than what we probably would put in on a normal weekday. we definitely have like a script that I kind of created that helped us early on. I mean, we don't need it anymore, but of like, what do we do next? You know, the lighting of the candle and
of course,
though, asking the questions about what is Shabbat and kind of drilling that into the kids, because it helps them sort of remember it as that repetition, especially when you have people over. They like to be able to kind of share the answers that they know. And then the blessings for the kids too, like, you know, obviously we have that memorized now, but it took a year or so of like, you know, what, reading off the sheet. And then it's nice to be able to have that handy, so when you do have other people come over, you can kind of hand that off to them and say, here's how we do it if you want to follow along, kind of deal, you know. And
now, let's hear like the blessing for the boys. Let's hear it.
All right. So may the Lord bless you and keep you. May his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. May he always be with you and grant you strength. May he make you like Ephraim and Manasseh, give you the faith of Abraham, the heart of David, the righteousness of Christ, as you build our family from, and our kids always do, from generation to generation. And so my wife does the women's one, but then, you know, like when my parents are over, they're not following this. They don't do Shabbat, you know, but they love it, because we, and this is something I think maybe even you or Mark kind of mentioned, like we ask them questions about their childhood, and my kids eat that stuff up. And my parents are pretty good storytellers, and they had a pretty hilarious family, this like loud Italian family. So there's still stories that we tell today that my dad told, you know, at one Shabbat, you know, 2 years ago, that it's just kind of become legend around our family. And it's just a, like a funny thing that the kids think, you know, they love hearing about the small, you know, details. So definitely anytime you have guests, trying to involve them in that way, instead of like trying to follow a script, you know, just asking them a lot of questions about their life or their childhood. I mean, for us, it's just, I remember when we went to, April and I both studied abroad in Spain, and they had a thing called Sobre Mesa, which just means around the table. And dinners just lasted a long time because they would eat, but then they did this Sobre Mesa where they just sit around the table and talk, right? Mm. And we really kind of lean into that at Shabbat, especially where we'll have little question cards that we'll ask, and the kids will ask, they'll each get to ask one, or we'll do that with guests and ask them questions. And it just kind of creates this depth and this kind of vulnerability around the table. It just makes it fun, you know? Those are kind of probably the big things about the Shabbat dinner. And then Sabbath, similarly, we used to kind of think it had to be, you know, really quiet and holy. And, you know, with a lot of young kids running around, we're like, we're ruining it. Like, this isn't working, you know? And our kind of idea now is like, everybody should just be able to do something fun, something they enjoy, you know? And so we do a lot of outdoor activities. You know, we're usually swimming on Shabbat, or we're hiking or going to the park. Oftentimes I'm playing pickleball in the morning. And even sometimes it's a project that, like, I actually like doing projects. So I used to kind of get convicted, like, I'm doing a house project, you know, I'm planting a garden. Like last Shabbat, I'm planting a garden that kids really wanted to do. They all had fun. It wasn't like, it didn't feel like work. That's great. Do that, you know?
Right.
I'm trying not to do any Chick-fil-A work. I'm trying not to do any real estate work, but the things that are like life-giving that are different that, doing together as a family, as much togetherness as we can do, there's really no like rules around it. We try to be a little bit more open to what's going to give us life. And we, you know, one of the questions we ask our kids is like, what type of rest are we trying to do on Shabbat? And they always say soul rest. So like, what is it that gives that rest to the soul as opposed to just like, you know, physical rest, you know, we'll try to differentiate those two. So, I mean, we get that too, but.
That's great, Jordan. I know you need to run to a meeting. We're very grateful for your wisdom. And I'll just say again, what's so exciting about your home is that I'm just repeating what you said. You take so much of the hospitality of and natural warmth and shepherding that happens in your home. You transfer that to your business and it becomes something that's really attractive to people. And then you said that you took the kind of administration, the kind of regular care that somebody gives to their work life, you brought that into your home and you find that both are enriched. And I think that's a great lesson for our people. And we are just so happy to be in touch with you guys at all. And we're glad that you listen to Abe's Wallet. And we're also really proud to expose people to what you have in the Siervo home. So bless you and thank you for your time.
My pleasure. And honestly, thank you guys, because it is true. That's one of the things I didn't mention. Early on, I found Abraham's Wallet, and that has definitely also been instrumental, just listening to the podcast. And I have, probably not even because of me, but when you guys met some of our friends, there's a handful now in my community that are Abraham's Wallet, you know, regular listeners as well. And I think just the practical nature of the way you guys share stories like this and you know, makes it a little bit more bite size, a little bit more attainable. But you guys have been doing it for longer, and it's kind of cool to see you guys sharing that wisdom and that guidance as well. So thanks for
that's all you wonderful. Get. Thank you, Jordan.
Thank you, Jordan.
My pleasure. Eat more chicken.